Hi, this is Steve from Illuminae, and we explore, listen, learn, and enlighten. This week we are speaking with Michonne Garrett. She is the Information Systems and Business Manager at Friends of Gone Rogue in Minneapolis. And her job, among many of her tasks, is to manage the process of the newly created COVID-19 NRCF family tracking study. And they are literally tracking each individual student and their family to see how they are faring through the COVID-19 pandemic. Michonne spent some time with us to understand why the project was initiated and how it will affect the service of the students and their families by the Gone Rogue Children's Foundation. So, without further ado, here is my conversation with Michonne. So, hi, this is Steve, and today we are with Michonne Garrett. She's the Information Systems and Business Manager at Friends of Gone Rogue. And hi, Michonne, how are you doing today?
I'm good, Steve. How are you?
All right. So that sounds like kind of a hefty title, job title. Can you tell us a little bit about what that title means or what you actually do?
Sure. So I help run operations on the U.S. side of Friends of Gone Rogue. And a big part of what I do is I manage our information system, which we use Salesforce. So a lot of my job includes managing data, making sure that the data that we collect about the kids and the sponsorships is all accurate and makes sense, and that we can use that for managing the operations and for applying for grants and things like that. The other part of my job title is business manager, which kind of captures the operations type work that I do. So I help with marketing and technology, and I help make sure that all of our processes and procedures are accurate and efficient, and that we can function with our little team, that we can function well and do what we need to do to make sure that the kids in Kenya are supported.
Well, I know from our experience together, you're really responsible for when we do some of these weekly updates for the COVID-19 updates, and you kind of take all the pieces and put it together and get it out, don't you?
Yeah, I'm the executioner. Well, yeah, I guess it's the right word. I execute everything. So
there's probably another way to say that, but yeah, it might translate interesting wherever it goes. That's great.
Think through and kind of make things happen. So there's a lot of other people involved in like idea making and kind of pulling the different pieces into place, and then I push it out and make it happen and make it look good.
Cool. So today we wanted to talk specifically about an initiative that Gone Rogue Children's Foundation and Friends of Gone Rogue have implemented in Kenya, and I guess in Kenya and in Minneapolis. This is kind of a team effort, right? And it's the COVID-19 NRCF family tracking study or project, or I don't know if we have another word to add to that, but basically it's an ongoing project. And I wonder if first you can maybe talk a little bit about what was the problem or the issue that presented itself that made this solution or this project kind of come to life?
So in a typical year, the case managers in Kenya are regularly interacting with the kids and their families. So they do Saturday program every week and they see the majority of the kids. They do home visits and school visits. They're talking to the students' teachers. The secondary kids are doing life skills training and sexual and reproductive health training. They get tutoring help. There's just all of these different interactions that the kids have with the case managers and in the office. With COVID-19, it means that the case managers don't get to have those interactions with the kids, especially not in person. So one member of the family comes to pick up a food pack every other week, and that's it. So we wanted to make sure that we could keep track of the kids and their families, make sure everybody was okay, see if anybody is sick and needs support. The families are, like, COVID-19 is difficult here. COVID-19, when you're in a slum, is a whole other monster. And so the purpose of this kind of data collection, report tracking, is for the case managers to have a regular touch point with the families to be able to ask them a set of questions so that we can make sure that the families are okay. And if we need to intervene or provide assistance in some way, that we have a way to manage that and track that information.
So how do they actually make contact with those families?
They are making phone calls. So most of the families have access to a phone. So, and the case managers are regularly in contact with the families anyway. So if a student isn't doing their homework or whatever, the case managers are already in contact with the families. So they are calling every single family. There's like 365 families. So the case managers are calling the families that they are responsible for. And the whole process takes about 3 weeks to finish all the phone calls, because the questions that we're asking, there's a lot of them. We have a lot of questions for them, and we want to make sure that everybody's okay. And so the phone calls take about 10 to 15 minutes per family. So it takes a while. So the calls are happening about once a month, and it takes about 3 weeks. So the case managers are making 3 weeks worth of calls, and then they get a week off, and then they do it all again. So
this is a tracking study. So you are able to actually look at things longitudinally. Is that correct?
Yeah. So we'll be able to see, the data over time. So for example, we'll be able to see, as time goes on, how many families are being pressured with eviction? How are people's incomes changing over time? How many people are getting sick over time? So some of the purpose of this is so that we can intervene right away when we get a response that deems that necessary. And the other part of it is so that we can see over time how this is affecting the families.
So you're saying that all the families are being contacted, so the data that are being collected, it's not just a sample, it's actually all the families.
Yeah, every family is being called.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And in some cases, there's like some post-secondary students live by themselves in an apartment because that's the safest place for them. A lot of students have moved home with their families, but for some students, they're living alone. So in those situations, there's just one student that is being called, and all the questions are being asked about that one student. But most of the students are living at home with their families.
So before we talk a little bit about some of the findings, I'm kind of wondering if you can give a sense of the span of kinds of questions that are being asked.
So we have different kind of themes of questions. One set is questions about the household. So who lives there, who's moved in, who's moved out, those kinds of questions. We're also asking about the health of the household. So is anybody sick? Has anybody developed flu-like symptoms? If they have, are they being treated? Are they just kind of staying home and trying to treat it themselves, like a lot of people here are doing? So we want to know how things are going health-wise for the family. We also are asking about income. So has their income increased, decreased? Are people working? How are they figuring it out? And then we're also asking about students' situation. So is the student receiving assignments at home? Are they able to complete the assignments at home? What barriers do they have to being able to complete those assignments? And then we're also asking about, kind of related to those things, what are the biggest barriers for the family in general? Are they facing eviction? Are they receiving assistance other than the food packs that we're giving them? Do they qualify for government insurance? So those, we just want to understand kind of where the family is at in general in terms of basic care. So healthcare, food, shelter, we just kind of want a base level of where the family's at.
So having this information, first of all, when did the data collection start?
It started once in June. So once we kind of realized that COVID wasn't going anywhere and that the schools definitely weren't going to reopen, we realized that we needed to have a way to communicate with the families.
And how long is the plan to continue collecting the information?
Right now, it's kind of indefinite. So we collected first in June, and the sponsors received an email back from the case managers after that first initial call and just said, hey, here's what I learned about your student and their family. We're now going to be releasing the information that we just collected in July, and we're just going to kind of continue on that trend and see what happens in Kenya. It's such a dynamic situation. Right now, the schools are closed through the end of the year, so the calls will definitely continue at least that long, but we're just kind of, we kind of have to go with the flow because we don't know what's going to happen. Nobody does.
Well, so sounds like you've got a good kind of infrastructure set up to be able to kind of track things and monitor changes and identify kind of peaks of issues to deal with. And I would guess it, not trying to get ahead of myself, but I guess it would somehow direct some of the priorities of the organization or some of the program issues, or how is that, not that those things have happened yet, but how would you see, maybe they have happened, but how do the findings get used in terms of the organization itself?
So one example is technology and school assignments at home. So there's a small percentage of students, like post-secondary students, who aren't able to complete their school assignments at home because they don't have the necessary technology. So after learning that, now here in the US, we're able to start fundraising and figuring out how we can get those students access to the technology that they need to be able to complete their school assignment. Another thing is the Food from Friends program. So we know that every single family in our program is getting food from us and needs the food from us. So most of them don't have another way to get food, at least not enough food for their family. So we've learned from this study that food is necessary for survival for all of our family. So we're going to be able to adjust our budget and the way that we continue operating in the new year to be able to continue to support the families, depending on what happens with school.
Interesting. So I'm wondering, at this point, you said that you'll be releasing the first, let's say, official report or findings, however, how do you kind of plan to do that? Is that something where, is there going to be kind of a regular document that gets released, or will there just be updates through emails, or what is the form that those who will be receiving this information or have access to it, what would they be seeing?
So this week we're going to be sending information to each sponsor about their student. So we collect all of the information in the information system that I talked about earlier, Salesforce. We're collecting all of the information there, and then we are releasing the information about each student and their family to their sponsor. So each sponsor is going to see student-specific information. And then we'll also be sending an email with some kind of general information and percentages and sort of broader data trends that we're seeing from the data that we've collected from all of the families. So there's a macro view and a micro view, and we'll be sharing those with everybody.
So at this point, do you have any kind of top line issues or findings that you've been able to kind of summarize, and is there something you can share at this point?
Yeah, so a couple of interesting things that are home and family related. 84% of our families said that they have had a decrease in household income. So multiple people have lost their jobs. That's a big percentage. That's almost all of the families have reported a decrease in their household income. And of that, in addition, 15% of all of the families reported that no one is working. So 15% of the families have zero income. So obviously that affects them on many levels. There are certain families that live in parts of the slum that have to pay a fee to use the latrines and to use the community showers. And so if the family has zero income, they literally don't even have a way to bathe or to get water to cook with, things like that. So they're going to have to be creative and figure out how to survive. So we're giving them the food packs, and then they have to kind of figure that out. 13% of the families reported being at high risk of eviction. So I'm not sure that people in the U.S. really understand that just because somebody lives in a slum and isn't living in, you know, what we consider like a property, they're still landlords. They're still people that own those places that the families are living in. So 13% of them are at very high risk of eviction. We have had a couple of families that have already been evicted. They just get locked out of their house until they pay the fees. So there's no formal process. There's no notice that's posted, nothing like that. They just come home one day and they're locked out. Everything they own is inside. So, and then they just have to figure out how to pull money together to get the locks taken off.
I know that, excuse me, but on that note, I know that in some of the first conversations that we had with the weekly updates, that became one of the most urgent issues that the Garden Road Children's Foundation's staff were helping to manage, was just keeping people in their apartments. And that was, and yeah, anybody who's ever been there can visualize like, wow, you know, cause there's not much to begin with. Right. And then you're going to go from that to nothing. That's pretty terrifying. That's got to be pretty terrifying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would imagine so.
Yeah.
There's nowhere to go. It's not like you can go stay with your next door neighbor because everybody's crammed into their own houses. So there's not really anywhere for them to go.
Well, yeah, what else have you got?
In that same vein, 67% of the families reported that they're struggling to pay rent, even more than before. Obviously, these families are extremely poor, and so it's hard for all of them to be able to pay rent. But 67% said it's really hard now to figure out how to pay my rent. So that's a big risk for people, especially right now. It's winter in Kenya. It's the rainy season. It's very cold for them. And in Minnesota, we don't think it's that cold when it's 50 and raining. But for them, it's freezing and it's raining. And so that just makes it even harder. They really need shelter right now. And they're feeling the pressure of that. And the longer that this virus continues and the longer that the government stays shut down, the worse it's getting. In terms of, and so then you think about, okay, so there's students living in these families and they're trying to do their schoolwork at home. If their family can't pay for water, how are they going to pay for electricity to be able to see their assignments and do their work? So then you kind of start thinking about that and just how difficult it is for these students to work, do school from home. So 51% of the students are receiving and completing school assignments at home. So that's great. Half the kids are getting their assignments. They can do them. They've figured out how to make it happen. 21% of the students reported that the school's not sending any assignments. So we've learned since then that a lot of those students are post-secondary students who are either at the end or the very beginning of their post-secondary journey. And so there's not really anything for them to do. There's also students that are in trade school, so vocational school. You can't send, if they're in mechanic school, you can't send a car home with the kids so that they can learn stuff. If they're in beauty school, you know, they could do their mom's hair or something like that, but they wouldn't have all the tools and things that they need. So there is a percentage of students that don't have anything to do. So that's another area that we saw that we could have some action. So we've been sending school books home with those kids so that they can do some kind of learning while they're at home, even if it's not necessarily directly related to what they're studying. And then, as I mentioned before, 7% of the students said that they didn't have access to the necessary technology to complete their assignments. So that's something that we are also working on. A barrier to that is that we can't have the kids coming into the computer lab like we did before. So the place where the computer lab exists is actually in a residential area. And that residential area has said, we're not comfortable with big groups of students coming in. There also can't be groups of more than 10 people at a time. So the students are having to make appointments to come in and use the computer, which can't happen every day. So there's a barrier for that too. So it's just kind of another thing that we're trying to figure out and find a new way of doing things.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Sounds like it's a moving target, you know, with all these things, but it sure is much better to identify the issues and have them quantified and to know if there's an impact being made, which, you know, won't know for a while because don't have that information yet, but it's nice to at least to know what the priorities can be.
And it also helps to give us a heads up. So if we can start to see things that are trending a certain way, we may be able to get ahead of some of the issues instead of just having to react to something that's an emergency.
Good point. Good point. I'm not sure if there's anything else. I mean, you really covered a lot of ground here with this initiative. And I'm just wondering if there's anything that kind of you have to add.
I would just say something else that I've found interesting is that a few of the families have decided to move. They call it upcountry in Kenya. So most of the families are from a village, and a lot of them still have family in those villages. And so in some cases, the families, the entire family or a portion of the family is moving upcountry. So for us, when that happens, we kind of lose access to the students. There's not Wi-Fi up there. There's no cell service. There's not really any way to get in contact with them. So we're hoping that the students and the families can find enough support in Nairobi to be able to stay there so that we can make sure that we have access to be able to help them and to give them food support and things like that. But we also understand that for some families, it's happened in my family here. I have family in New York that went to go live upstate so that they weren't in the city. So we know that for some families, that's just safer and the better option. So it's been interesting. We're interested to see if that becomes more of a trend now that Nairobi has kind of opened up the gates a little bit, to see if that kind of travel is going to increase. So we hope not, because we want the kids to stay around and go back to school when school's open. But yeah, we're not sure what's going to happen with that.
And as far as I understand, we're still, the organization is still at just one case of COVID-19 positive. Is that correct?
Yes, one confirmed case. So there have been a few students who have reported flu-like symptoms. They've just stayed home and done home remedies to this point. So we're not sure if they've been tested positive or not. I think that there's a lot of fear around going to be tested, because if you test positive, you are mandated to go to a government treatment center where you're quarantined, and then the families have to pay for that themselves. So people in the slums are actually avoiding being tested, which is not great, but they are just kind of staying home and hoping that they can get over it, because the alternative is extremely expensive and they're quarantined for multiple weeks and they foot the bill for it, which the families can't afford. So at this point, only one family has been quarantined in one of those government facilities. So we have one confirmed case, but the other cases, we're not sure.
Yeah, talk about a double whammy. I mean, you get sick and then you have to pay for your accommodations that are enforced. It's kind of,
we know how that goes in the US, right? If you're not insured, you gotta pay for it yourself. I mean, it's not a great system. So
but we have the ability at least hunker down at home. Mm-hmm. And we have some social isolation that we can experience in our places. But when you live in a 16 by 16 or 16 by 30 foot space, there's not too much room there, is there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, well, thank you so much for this update. We'll check in with you later at some point and see, you know, in a few months and see how it's been going. We'll keep looking for some of the reporting. Will the reports also, or the findings, somehow be shown to those who may not be sponsors or supporters of the organization but are curious, like through the website, or where else might someone find some of this information?
Yeah, so we have a COVID-19 updates page on our website. So if you go to gongroad.org onto our homepage, there's a button right there on the homepage that says COVID-19 updates. And you can go to that page and see the most recent updates. And you can also go back and see historically the different updates that we've put out as this has progressed and things have changed and schools got canceled, and then we thought they were going to reopen, and then they didn't. And so there's been lots and lots of changes, and we've done a number of updates and we'll continue to do so. So that's the place to go, gongroad.org, and then click on the COVID-19 updates button.
Okay, that sounds great. Well, with that, thanks so much again, and good luck with the tracking and with all the other tasks that I'm sure you're pretty busy with these days, given all the changes in the organization. And it's also an organization that's always been growing and innovating and finding ways to serve a lot of kids and a lot of families in Nairobi. So thanks again for all your work.
Absolutely. Very happy and proud to do this work. So
excellent. Well, thank you.
Thank you. Talk to you later. Bye.
Thanks, Michonne. That was a really great conversation, and really learned a lot about how things are operating in Kenya and the systems that are established to help track those students and families as they're going through the COVID-19 crisis. And the pandemic is touching us all. I hope all of you are doing okay. Hope you're adjusting. It seems like we're all in it for the long run. So wish you well, and please keep in touch. And appreciate your listening to the podcast and showing interest in what others are experiencing around the world. And we hope to continue these podcasts. And please drop a note if you have any opinions or comments about the broadcast. Otherwise, best to you, and see you next time. Thank you.